Here is a dreadful truth. South Sudan, the world's youngest country, is also one of the top 10 humanitarian aid recipients in the world. And yes, it is a center of a humanitarian catastrophe that is now unfolding, despite being one of the top 10 aid recipients. A civil war, an aid community that is having a hard time being viewed as even-handed as it tries to function with its own armed security details, its own food supplies. The United Nations has accused the South Sudanese government and rebels of blocking aid and life-saving supplies. At least 290,000 people are at risk of dying from malnourishment. Jeffrey Gettleman is East Africa Bureau Chief for the New York Times. Jeffrey, what have you seen that gives you a sense that this is a real dire situation that's unfolding?
South Sudan is one of the scariest places I travel. Every time I go to South Sudan, it's with a sense of dread. The country is very lawless. It's very dangerous. There are armed groups in every corner. Every type of kind of chaos breeds there. And I've seen people who have suffered every type of abuse, people who have been shot apart by bandits, people who are starving to death because soldiers are blocking food to their areas, people who are just trapped in poverty with, you know, no possessions, rags on their backs, children who are sick and clearly malnourished. So it's a country that you really can't overstate how needy and desperate and messed up it is right now.
And yet it is a recipient of international aid. Does the aid community sort of fit into the lawlessness here? Is it trying to fight the lawlessness?
I think you got to adjust your expectations about aid. In a place where the government is really weak, and where you have so many weapons and such a history of war, aid can only do so much. So there are lots of aid workers in South Sudan right now as we speak, and they are doing lots of different projects, vaccination programs, schools, food deliveries, but it's very dangerous for them, and they can only operate in certain areas. Just a couple weeks ago, six aid workers were killed on the side of the road. We don't even know who did it, but that's the environment we're talking about.
If you're one of the 290,000 people at risk of dying from malnourishment, when you wake up in the morning, where do you even think to go to find food? What are your options?
From what I've seen, you go to places where you think you're going to get some help, which would be urban areas or camps that have been set up by aid workers, or you forage and you scavenge. And in parts of South Sudan right now, people are eating anything that's remotely edible. For instance, there are people living deep in the swamps of the Nile River, which is very beautiful in some places, very wide. The grass is very green. You know, the birds flying over the water. I mean, it's almost like a scene out of a different time. But there's very little to eat in the swamp, and so people are ripping up lotus plants and other kind of weeds and trying to boil those and get some calories out of eating those, and they get sick from that.
And given the instability that you described earlier, if someone chooses the option of walking in most cases to an urban area where they've heard that a food distribution point has been set up, they may encounter a militia and just get shot.
Exactly. I mean, it's hard for us to appreciate, you know, you sitting where you are and me sitting where I am and people listening, how desperate the situation is. People really don't know what's going to happen the next day. And it's really sad because that does permanent damage. If you deny a young child certain nutrients and a steady, decent diet, you know, that can affect their memory, their IQ, you know, lots of things way down the line. And it's just sad because the people who are suffering, they didn't cause this. You know, they're blameless. They were just on their farms or in their villages, and this war broke out, and it disrupted the food supply, and it drove them from their homes, and it killed many of their relatives. And now they're just stuck looking around thinking, well, how are we going to make it through today?
Jeffrey Gettleman is the East Africa Bureau Chief for the New York Times. He spoke to us from Nairobi, Kenya. Jeffrey, thank you so much.
Glad to help.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.